It is Wednesday, June 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Iran blames Saudi Arabia for attacks in Tehran.
To say a few hours after the attack that this was ordered by Saudi Arabia when ISIS has actually taken responsibility, to me, is rather strange and dangerous.
British voters prepare to go to the polls, and a new recording of an old song gives some encouragement to a world increasingly on edge because of terrorism. It's all ahead. Iran's Revolutionary Guards are blaming Saudi Arabia for terror attacks Wednesday at symbolic locations in Tehran. The Islamic State group says it's responsible for the attacks that left at least 12 people dead and 42 others wounded at Iran's parliament and at a shrine to late leader Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. IS militants claim responsibility for the attacks. I spoke to Abbas Milani, the director of Iranian studies at Stanford University in California. I asked him for his reaction to the statement by the Revolutionary Guards blaming Saudi Arabia for the attacks.
I doubt that they know. I doubt that they have the kind of intelligence that would link Saudi Arabia to this. If they had suggested that the intense rhetoric from Saudi Arabia might have encouraged this, if they had said that in the past Saudi Arabia had ideologically and in some ways citizens financially supported ISIS, I think that would have been a credible thing. But to say a few hours after the attack that this was ordered by Saudi Arabia when ISIS has actually taken responsibility, to me, is rather strange and dangerous because it increases the level of vitriol between the two countries to a dangerous level.
Well, as you said, Islamic State did say earlier that it is responsible for these attacks. Is this yet another sign that Sunni Muslims are targeting Shiite Muslims?
Well, you know, if one had been reading the literature that has been coming out of ISIS, for example, Iran has been one of their targets. They have talked about Iran as a heretical state. They do not accept Iran as an Islamic state. In that sense, unfortunately, there are some structural historic similarities between their views and the views of radical Sunnis like the Wahhabis of Saudi Arabia in terms of not accepting Shiism as a school in Islam. So I think there are forces in the region, and ISIS is certainly one of the most potent, who want to create a civil war, a religious war between Shiites and Sunnis. They're on record as saying that they want to do that. The way they target the Shiites is very clearly part of their strategy. And my hope is that everyone, Iranian leaders and Saudi leaders and Egyptians and Qataris and all, recognize that that is a historic mistake of truly biblical proportion. If you put that region into a religious strife that is going to be long and enduring, you're going to force another major historic defeat on Islam. Remember, the Islamic world in the 16th century went into a similar, almost several decade-long war between the Shiites of Iran and the Sunnis of the Ottoman Empire. And many historians would tell you that that is the historic reason for Islamic world falling dismally behind the West in technology, in the economy, in sciences. So to do that yet again at this very crucial moment in history is more than folly, it's madness.
One of the attacks took place at the parliament and another at the shrine. I would think, I don't know about the shrine, but I would think the parliament is, the security would be quite tight there, and yet they were able to get in.
Both of those places have tight security. All government offices have tight security in Iran. And from one story that I have read, they dressed as women, thus making it more difficult to have them search. I don't know the details, but clearly they were well informed and operation was well planned. They actually, in real time, put on ISIS website images from inside the building as they were going through the mayhem, as they were killing people and shouting slogans. And that is, again, something remarkable that they would be able to do that. It shows a level of planning that is surprising.
And this is occurring as there have been attacks in Europe. A number of them have been blamed on Islamic State, although some of them have been seen as inspired, rather, by Islamic State. But certainly a lot of people in the world are on edge now.
Well, I think it is not unreasonable because, again, if you look back at the history of ISIS and its precursors, once they're made facing a challenge in one area, they metastasize into a new tactic and a new form of creating what they called managed barbarity. And so the fact that they're losing territory in Iraq and Syria as we speak was, to me, clearly indicative that that's how they're going to react. They're going to try to recruit with the notion that we haven't been defeated and that we are everywhere from Libya to Manchester, now from Tehran to Kabul. So I'm not surprised, and I am saddened by it, and I'm worried by it, because I don't think the U.S. administration, I don't think European governments, I don't think Islamic governments are taking this thing seriously enough. This is, I think, a major challenge. It's going to take a lot of wise people to collectively find solution to it. You can't bomb your way out of this. You can't rhetoric your way out of this, as the Islamic Republic, the IRGC, is trying to do. It needs a collective wisdom of almost everyone in the world, because I think the problem now is everywhere, from China to Russia to Europe to Iran to U.S. to Africa. It's going to take some serious strategic thinking.
Abbas Milani, the director of Iranian Studies at Stanford University. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Big couple days here in Washington, D.C., with a number of hearings going on about Russia's involvement in the U.S. elections, about cover-ups, things like that. So the Senate Intelligence Committee is hearing from all different kinds of folks today. And then tomorrow we're going to hear from former FBI Director James Comey. But today, hashtag Senate Intel Committee is trending, and we're seeing these names pop up as people testify. So, for example, Senator Angus King, who is an independent senator from the state of Maine, grilling Admiral Mike Rogers, who's the director of the National Security Agency, and Dan Coats, who is the director of the National Intelligence Agency, why they won't answer his questions, why they're being evasive. Lots of video clips. These hearings stretch on for hours and hours, so oftentimes they get distilled down to a few key moments, and those are the moments that we're seeing on social media. Another name that's trending is California Senator Kamala Harris having a very strong exchange with Department of Homeland Security Chief John Kelly. People saying, depending on how you look at her comments, she either got the best of him and tripped him up, or that she was rude and interrupted him. She kept pressing him for questions, and he said that she would not let him answer. So lots of these little moments being peppered throughout the day as this hearing goes on, and we'll see that continue into tomorrow's hearing. But even before that hearing started this morning, we had big news as President Trump tweeted about Christopher Wray, his choice to be the new FBI director. Bush Deputy Attorney General in the Bush administration deals with fraud and things like that. People find that very interesting. Lots of people picking through his background on social media. And many people noting that he represented New Jersey Governor Chris Christie in that Bridgegate scandal and that trial. So connected to someone who's in Trump world, if we can call it that, Governor Chris Christie, who was a big surrogate for Donald Trump. So an interesting choice. Lots of people parsing through that and wondering what the impetus was for choosing him and if he'll even be confirmed and how that process will work. But also curious about the timing before Comey testifies tomorrow, appointing or announcing the appointment of a new FBI director before the former one testifies.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. As we heard top U.S. intelligence chiefs say, President Trump did not inappropriately pressure them in the Russia collusion investigation in the election. President Trump will nominate former federal prosecutor Christopher Wray as FBI director. Friendship is found to top family for health and happiness, and South Africa's political leaders hint at impending end for an unpopular president. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory has released the third-year survey data from its Near-Earth Object Wide Field Survey Explorer, or NEOWISE, mission. Over the course of the year, NASA says its asteroid-hunting spacecraft found 97 celestial objects that were previously unknown. Of the 97, the space agency says 28 were near-Earth objects, 64 were asteroids from the main asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, and 5 were comets. So far, the NEOWISE mission has categorized 693 near-Earth objects since it was relaunched in December of 2013. 114 of the objects are newly found. Along with those gathered in the first 2 years, NEOWISE has captured almost 8 million sets of images of the sky. None of the near-Earth objects are predicted to hit the Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the song What the World Needs Now gets an update. Britons go to the polls Thursday following Prime Minister Theresa May's call April 18th for an election. The contest was aimed at strengthening the Conservative Party's hold on Parliament as the country braces for tough Brexit negotiations with the European Union. While May is expected to prevail, her hopes for a stronger majority in the House of Commons may not. Polls show a dwindling lead for the Tories and surprising strength for the opposition Labour Party, led by socialist Jeremy Corbyn. A key to the outcome will be the size of the youth vote for Corbyn. Australian National University's Anne-Marie Elijah tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, with three terrorist attacks hitting Britain in less than 3 months, the key issue may turn out to be security.
Look, it may be, and I think we certainly have to say it's been a factor in the campaign, and probably a factor that on balance would be considered to benefit the current government. But I think we'll have to really wait and see how the voting pans out before we know what the key issues for voters have been.
Is this as much a test for Labour's leader, Jeremy Corbyn, than it is for Theresa May, the Prime Minister?
It is indeed, but I think on balance, people would probably say that actually, in spite of low expectations, Corbyn has come out of this campaign relatively well, given that the polls have tightened to the point where even some of the polls predicted the possibility of a hung parliament. So on balance, I think even though May went into this election campaign in a position of strength, most people think that the Conservatives have not performed terribly well.
Why have the polls tightened?
There are a range of issues here, in part about the way in which the major parties have represented themselves. And then, as I said, there's this question of, in the end, which issues the voters will find most important in the kind of hierarchy. So certainly the polls have tightened in part because May's own performance has not been perceived as terribly strong. And in fact, to the extent that economic issues have been playing out in this election campaign, it seems as though Labour has made some ground in that area.
What issues will change in Britain? I think particularly of the Brexit negotiations with the European Union.
Yes, in relation to the potential for a Labour win or a hung parliament, for example, that would change the Brexit situation quite dramatically. Particularly in the event of a hung parliament, the situation would be serious because if there was to be a coalition, perhaps a Labour-led coalition, for example, as some people have suggested, that would take time. And Brexit negotiating timetable is due to kick off a mere couple of weeks after the actual polling day. So that situation would be very difficult indeed. If the Conservatives win through, as they are widely expected to, I think, perhaps with a very minor increase majority or perhaps no increase at all in that majority, then I guess it's business as usual. The question then will become, has May left herself in a sufficient position of strength to deal with the discontents inside her own party in order to carry through those negotiations successfully?
Australian National University's Anne-Marie Elijah. The Washington Post said British pollsters missed the mark on the outcome of the 2015 election and the Brexit referendum last year. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Recent terrorism inspired a powerful musical tribute. Last Sunday in Manchester, England, many prominent musicians and singers joined Ariana Grande in a fundraising concert to help the victims of last month's bombing at the Manchester Arena. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with his perspective on how music can help to ease society's fears.
Today, I thought it was very timely and very important to talk about what has been dominating the news headlines as of late. Terrorism, terrorist attacks. Of course, there was one May 22nd, right at the end of the Ariana Grande concert in Manchester. She just held a big tribute concert over the weekend called One Love Manchester, raised over $2 million in ticket sales. I guess more money's coming in from donations and other sources. This will be a very, very profitable event for the One Love Foundation, which is a charity that's been set up to help the families of the victims in that tragedy, where 59 people were injured, 22 people lost their lives, and we're still feeling the effects. There's many still clinging to life in the hospitals. Many, many stars came out to support this event. Justin Bieber, Coldplay, Liam Gallagher, Katy Perry. The list goes on and on and on. Ariana sang a song with Miley Cyrus. Pharrell was there, sang a song as well. A lot of people were there, gave their message of support. And, of course, over the weekend, we also had the London Bridge terrorist attack, which claimed a number of lives, number of people still missing from that tragic event. So today, I found a song, and this is a song more than an artist specifically, a song that kind of fits the theme and the mood of the world right now. Terrorism isn't exclusive to big countries. It's happening in very small places around the world as well. And so I want to play a song that originally debuted on the charts in 1965. There's a new version of it out right now by a very hot and contemporary artist. We'll talk more about her, but first let's listen to this song. It's called What the World Needs Now is Love.
Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time.
Well, I remember that song from many years ago, certainly. Who is the singer? Who's the artist?
Well, originally the song was made popular by Jackie DeShannon in 1965. The new version is by a singer whose name is Andra Day. And she lives in San Diego, California right now. She's been on tour for her latest album, best known for her top 10 charting hit called Rise Up, which earned her 2 Grammy nominations last year. I heard this song for the first time at the end of a movie recently that I saw, and I thought this song says it all and says it perfectly. This is a song that we need right now. We need love. We need healing. And I thought that I would play this from Andra Day, who is one of the best R&B singers in contemporary music right now. She won a Soul Train Award for her songwriting ability. As I mentioned, 2 Grammy nominations and a number of other award nominations as well. She's very deserving, very new in the game. You know, even though she was born in 1984, she's just kind of getting the notoriety that she deserves. Great singer, great songwriter. And I wanted to honor the memory of the terrorist victims with a song that's very, very appropriate. And it was written by Burt Bacharach and was a huge hit for Jackie DeShannon in 1965. So the song rings true to this very day.
Yeah, You know, there are a lot of songs like that. Ariana Grande sang at her concert, Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yes.
A very old song, but
yes.
It's wonderful.
And everybody was in tears when she sang that song. It was a night filled with emotion Sunday. As I mentioned a little while ago, the money continues to come in. Ariana opened that up to everybody who was in attendance on May 22nd at her show. The attack, the bomb that blew up at this coward, as President Trump called him, loser, decided to detonate was as the kids were leaving the Manchester Arena. And how on earth can somebody target kids? You go to a pop concert, you have to have in mind this is an event attended by youth. It doesn't make it right at any age, but innocent kids who are just getting their start in life. This was a tragedy of epic proportion. And as I mentioned earlier, 59 people battling for their lives in the hospital. 22 lost their lives, and this is something we're going to be talking about and thinking about for a long time to come.
Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
Oh, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. There are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Listen, Lord.
The music of Andra Day. Well, that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As the world has grown increasingly interconnected, fast-evolving technologies, globalization, and trade liberalization have all but removed many traditional barriers to free movement of goods and people and facilitated rapid transnational business, trade, and banking transactions. Transnational criminal networks are among the great beneficiaries of these developments. Today, such organizations employ the latest technological advances and use commercial jets, fishing vessels, and container ships to move drugs, people, small arms, crude oil, cigarettes, counterfeit and pirated goods, and toxic waste through the region, generating massive profits, said Senior Director for National Security and Diplomacy Anti-Crime Programs at the State Department's Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, David Luna. Transnational crime is tremendously lucrative. According to a number of international organizations, the illegal economy accounts for 8 to 15% of the world's gross domestic product, and nowhere are these criminal networks more active than in sub-Saharan Africa, said David Luna.
Illicit markets are growing across Africa to meet the global demand for arms, counterfeit cigarettes, diamonds, natural resources, and other illicit commodities.
This fact has not escaped terrorist organizations. Indeed, today's thriving illegal economy is so lucrative that terrorists are increasingly turning to criminal activities to fund their violent campaigns, such as those that we are witnessing today by Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, also known as AQIM, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and others, said Mr. Luna. So, for example, in the Sahel and the Maghreb, AQIM finances its terror campaigns by collecting a tax on drugs passing through territory under its control. AQIM and ISIS, both of whom are involved in smuggling and trafficking in persons, are attempting to build alliances with violent extremist networks in Libya and across the Maghreb, Sahel, and West Africa. In reality, there is no region, no country, and no community who remain untouched by the destabilizing effects and corruptive influence of transnational organized crime and violent terrorism, said Mr. Luna. The United States is committed to strengthen international cooperation in support of our U.S. law enforcement and security agencies and the capacities of our allies and partners in Africa to disrupt and dismantle transnational organized criminals.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.